Welcome to an episode of Crippled by Culture, where we talk about everything in life and relate it to the disabled and chronically ill community. My name is Sean Gold, and I'm an author, advocate, and nonverbal public speaker for the disabled community. To provide a quick visual description for accessibility, I am a Black man with a white tracheostomy breathing tube in my neck, and I'm wearing an orange shirt. The person off camera is who you hear speaking for me. This video is of a Zoom call with me and the person talking for me off camera. And my guest is in the other box next to it. Today, I would like to thank Adam Ross for being my voice in this episode. In this episode, we're talking about the intersections of disability, mental health, and dating.
Before we get any further into the interview, I want to give a shout out to our partnering nonprofit festival for the series, Festability. As the media director, I help organize a wonderful event in St. Louis at the Missouri History Museum. We have so many activities and vendors set up all over with an amazing headliner for our main stage each year. It is the best event in St. Louis to celebrate your disability unapologetically while celebrating the Americans with Disabilities Act. Make sure you come out if you're nearby. Check out the link in the description to learn more. Thank you, Festability, for sponsoring the series. Now, back to the show.
Now, let's get to today's amazing guest. Ty Martin is a 34-year-old with muscular dystrophy, and he has a PhD in biomedical engineering. His research focuses on Alzheimer's and disability tech research and development. He was hospitalized with a septic gallbladder in 2021 and placed on a ventilator. Ty lost his ability to talk, eat, and use his wheelchair. Fast forward to today, and he's able to drink his favorite iced latte and eat chips and guacamole. Ty, thank you for being here today. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Happy to be on the weekend Saturday and football coming up Sunday.
Love it, yes. And would you mind giving a brief, or long, whatever, would you mind giving a visual description of yourself, please?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm a white male with glasses and a mustache and beard. And in the background is part of my TV and my diplomas from several years ago, actually, now. So
I appreciate
it. Seems like 2019 was yesterday, but it was a while back at this point.
Yeah. It's these. Yeah. The time has been flying. And thank you for the visual description, Ty. And so first, do you identify with having a disability or chronic illness?
Yes, I do, with disability for sure. And then chronic illness has been something that started up kind of recently.
Yeah. And can you talk about a little bit about how your disability or disabilities affect your everyday life today?
Yeah. So, muscular dystrophy is something that it can range based on which type it is and which individual. But for me, it's the Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And it's, gradually become more and more prevalent with every activity I do. So, now I'm at the point where it's, other than speaking and once I have my trackpad doing, everything on the computer, other than that, like everything is affected. So, eating, drinking, getting clothes on, leaving the house, anything like that.
Yeah. And how old were you when you got diagnosed?
So I think that the doctor started seeing signs around 8 or 10 years old. And then symptoms didn't really start, at least not aggressively, until I'm going to say 4 or 5 years later.
Okay. Yeah.
And, through elementary school, I would try to keep walking and finding ways to keep standing, and doing that kind of stuff. But then gradually, it got to the point where there were several falls and I needed assistance with one of the three-wheel scooters that you see like in Walmart or wherever. So yeah, it kind of just progressed from there.
Gotcha. Okay. And do you feel like there are other things going on that you feel are not diagnosed?
You know what? There might be some like slow transit, like digestion and stuff with because I actually was in the hospital with a septic gallbladder, and you know, like, and after that, it's been, you know, kind of difficult to making sure I move enough, and that, you know, when you're not mobile enough, you can develop things like pressure sores, or maybe, you know, that you have issues with like bowel blockages, things like that. So there might be some, you know, undiagnosed things on that side of it.
Right,
If that makes sense.
yeah, absolutely. And like you said, everybody's experience is going to be different, and it can vary from, yeah, exactly.
That's something that, you know, I feel like, well, you're both probably aware of it, but having a disability, it's like not a one size fits all thing, right? Like not even everyone with the same exact muscular dystrophy is going to have the same story. And it's funny, I've even had doctors, you know, that they think I have one form and give me a treatment suggestion, and I'm like, it's really something completely different, you know. So even experts don't fully know what to suggest.
Right. Yeah. There's so much nuance. You know, everybody's an individual. Yeah. And did you have to go through like any of your own internalized ableism along the journey? And yeah, how was that journey
You know,
towards
it's
inner acceptance?
oh, sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. That's okay. I was just asking, how was that journey? How has that journey been towards inner acceptance?
Yeah, you know, that's something I feel like I really got better at once I was at the university and when I started my graduate school work. Before that, even in my bachelor's degree program, I would always be like, you know, I need to try to make this normalized, so to speak, right? And like basically push the disability and the wheelchair and everything to the back burner, just like try to pretend it wasn't there, you know, or try to avoid it as much as I could, you know, which hindsight, that's definitely the wrong way to approach it. But you know, going through graduate school, actually I had really good mentors, and they helped me with accessibility needs, like getting a like an automatic door in my office and that kind of thing. And it, you know, I actually ended up doing research with disability, like technology and interviewing people with disabilities, and, you know, trying to make something that's not a one size fits all, you know, tool to help them with whatever they were dealing with, you know. So as far as like accepting it and everything, it just, I think something just clicked mentally. I don't know what exactly. I can't remember one moment where I was just like, oh, you know, it's like I've kind of figured out that, you know, everyone has their own disability, or they will at some point. I mean, and it's a human thing, you know. It doesn't make anyone any less human than somebody else.
Exactly. And I love what you said about accessibility and how that made such a big difference. The support, right? That's so important. That's so important. Yeah, because you're right, absolutely. Disability, it's everywhere where it's everyone, it's very human. Absolutely. And it's ignored a lot of the times, right? Because people are uncomfortable with disabilities and realize that they're more than likely going to become disabled in life, as well, because it is a part of that human experience,
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I always think about it like somebody should like roll a mile in my wheelchair, you know, and like figure out the exact things I go through. Like, for example, the push button doors as you're going through like into public buildings or whatever. Like the people that install those things have no idea where to put them. And a lot of times, even at a university, like, you know, you drive up to the door and try to reach it, and it's not accessible at all. So you have to basically, you know, sit outside and wait for somebody to open it. So it's all these things until, you know, people understand or that they see it or that you tell them, it's like, you know, they don't necessarily know that it's an issue. So I think it's something, it's a combination between just not understanding the needs, and also just, you know, it looks different than what they do, so it's, you know, abnormal or whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, it all goes back to your point, Ty, about disability is going to show up in infinite ways. The experiences for different people with disabilities is going to be infinitely different, right? And yeah, I mean, got to ask us, right? Got to ask us. We've got to be included in that. But I'd love to move on to, you know, more of the community that you've experienced within disability and your involvement in the disability community. Why do you think that the disabled community should focus on mental health more?
Wow, that's a very like deep question for sure. And I think I go back to when, you know, I was first like showing, like when I started using my wheelchair or whatever, you know, and it was more noticeable than just me limping or something. It was just like, you know, it was, how do I say, lost my train of thought there. let's see.
No, like, how do you define disability?
That's a tough one. You know, I really think in a lot of ways, to me, it's overcoming adversity. Like, you know, it's trying to live your life, you know, and I think that, you know, their disability doesn't have to mean obviously something physical or just mental or, you know, any combination. It can impact, you know, your life and be something you have to overcome, you know. And I mean, like, even like having eyesight like mine where I have to use glasses, I mean, that's a disability, right? I mean, like, there's everyday disabilities that millions of people deal with, but because it's so prevalent that, you know, it's not looked at as a disability. So, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
And to be fair, like, that can be an individual definition. I mean, everybody's definition of that could be slightly different too.
Right, yeah, exactly. Because like you said, we experience it so differently, individually, you know, in infinite ways.
And it's impacted so much by, you know, situation, environment, people that you're around, you know, there's a lot of variables for sure.
Absolutely. Accessibility. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when it comes to disability community, what do you think is something that stays with you that you've learned from the disability community or any specific disabled person? It could even be just from your own experience as a disabled person, but what have you learned that stays with you on a daily basis?
I think the first thing is acceptance to me, you know, because, I mean, back when I was doing my graduate work, I started out interviewing people with just any general disability that was interested in talking with me about like their situation and some of their like daily living needs that, you know, that were challenges to them. And the more I went along, the more I realized that, you know, I have my system and my way of dealing with any of the challenges or accepting my disability and everything. But then again, it's similar to the definition of disability. It's like every single person has their own thing that works. And a lot of them work really hard to do it independently. And a lot of them do it with family or caregivers. It's, you know, it's just, I've just learned there's so many people that, you know, are creative and adaptive in their own way.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and people, you know, may not even see something like glasses as being disabled, as they are the only normalized disability aids, right? Because it's whatever society deems as, you know, gonna be acceptable or normal or within the range. And then the vast many, many, many of us who don't fit within that. It all goes back to that social construction of disability.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people fail to realize how like isolating that can be, because it's a numbers thing. It's like, the percentage of the population that wears glasses is going to be, I would guess, really high, versus using a wheelchair. And then you can get even more, like smaller groups of people with certain disabilities there. So it's a difficult situation and it is impacted so much by, the culture and the place we live, and, even like TV, art, everything. It's like, the stigma of normalizing everything is just everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. It's all weaved into the society, into the cultures, right, into the arts, yeah, into the laws. Mm-hmm. Yeah, disability is relevant to everything. It's relevant to everything. And why do you think, so in light of that difficulty, right, and the fucked upness of it all, but along with the beauty and the unlimitedness of disability, when it comes to mental health, right? Why do you think is that something that we need to think more about when it comes to this disability and being disabled?
Right. I think there's a lot of aspects of mental health that go hand in hand with disability. And I think, it seems like to me, since the pandemic, so many more people have opened up to this idea of mental health and like willing to talk about difficult things that are going on in their lives or whatever. And it's, I think with disability, that's probably been a little bit, I don't want to say liberating, but like seeing, many more people all of a sudden say that mental health is okay, or like it's something that they need to talk about or work through. It's like, for me, I was like, oh, maybe it's a good idea to meet with like a mental health coach or, talk through some issues with somebody instead of, myself. I always try to have this positive silver lining, to everything. And while that's almost always the case, sometimes it's like, you don't have to have like a positive attitude or thought about something, you know what I mean? Like, I think that just kind of learning to like focus on your mental thoughts and like where you are and if you need help, to seek it out. I think that's become a really valuable part of dealing with really any disability, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all deserve that, right? We all deserve that help, that support. Because it's hard out here.
Once again, that's like a human thing, right? Like, I think all humans need that kind of interaction in some way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, because there's so much, the intersecting identities when it comes to, to disability, right? Our experiences are all tied together. And
definitely.
Yeah.
And instead of like the label of, disabled person or, whatever label that is used, I like to just take it back to, in the end, human is the label that all of us have, right? I mean, like, that's the one thing that kind of connects everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And unfortunately, the stigma of it can keep people from getting help. The idea that it's not, a human experience to need support, to desire to support, So Ty, can you talk about a little bit, as deeply or as broadly as you would like, or as you feel comfortable with, in what ways does mental health impact your life as a disabled person when it comes to, the experiences that you have as a disabled person, right? We talked about, of course, how everyone Everyone requires that mental health support, right? We are all human beings, and capitalism and the ableism and all of the isms, it makes it hard, for all of us. But specifically when it comes to your experiences as being disabled. Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that?
I think I'll start with, I think it was in 21 is when I went into the ICU with my septic gallbladder situation. And before it was always my legs and arms that had limited strength or were affected by my disease. And once I went into the ICU, I was intubated, so I lost my ability to speak and lost my ability to eat and drink and communicate like all together. And like that, when you're already trying to keep your independence with your disease, and then the things that you rely on that are always working for you, when they're stripped away, basically, your thoughts are like you're on your own pretty much, and unless you can figure out a way to communicate this creative, and luckily after, I don't know, 5 to 10 different nurses, I found one that realized I was trying to write notes on paper just by like moving my hand in like a writing motion, like somebody give me a pen or something. But yeah, that was the first major point in my life where I was like, this mental health thing is, I have to consider that and think about it because, when you're even more isolated, it can be a really dark place, and I'm not one that's done that before until that point. And, I'm not gonna lie, it got about as dark as you could possibly get, if you can imagine. But yeah, like since then, it's been, reading books on mental health, meeting with coaches, and there's a lot of great content on, social media from people with disabilities that have gotten me to the point where like I can help somebody else now too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that is something that, without having experienced it, many people, right, probably wouldn't know what that's like, right? But how afraid were you to possibly never be able to verbally communicate again, having that experience?
I can just say from like physically, typing on a keyboard has always been kind of a slow thing, and since I started, school and everything, and like, I realized more and more that speech was something that, I kind of just leaned on and took for granted. And like, when that gets taken away, you're like, any means necessary, however you have to communicate with somebody, like that's great. I mean, like, if there's so many methods and tools and technologies, and ways of expressing, thoughts and needs and that kind of thing. I just feel like, I almost took it for granted for sure, being able to speak. And that's strange hearing myself even say that because it's like I was already used to a disability, right? So I should have appreciated the things that I could do even more than I did.
Yeah, but the experience, right? It there's just something different about experiencing it.
And sometimes that's what it takes for, for the light bulb to go off and, for you to take the direction that you need to take in a way, if that makes sense. Like, I don't wish a septic gallbladder on anybody or 40 days in ICU, but if there's one thing, like if you want to like take stock of where you're at and where your life's at and where you want it to go, and if you want to change anything, like that's a good time to do it because you have nothing else to do.
Very that very good time to do it. But it's really great that you were able to have that support and that increased accessibility through your program and everything so that you could Be human.
Yeah, and I realize that other people's situations are way worse than my own, so that's why I'm like, another sort of like epiphany was like, there's other people that need help as much or more than I do, and if there's some small thing I can do to spread awareness or whatever activity, improves the situation even just a little bit, like it's something I want to do going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause it just, everybody's mental health matters. And yeah, it's important. It's important.
Definitely.
The reason why I always ask about internalized ableism in every interview is because for disabled people, it is a huge part of our mental health. What would you tell others with disabilities to make them understand or help them understand the intersection between disability and mental health?
Yeah, I mean, I think that me personally, I've fallen into that trap of, ableism as well. I'm like, thinking of like I don't want to tell someone about like issues I face that they're not familiar with. You know what I mean? Like, for example, just getting through the door, and I know that's kind of a simple one, but it illustrates the point. Like, I think I don't want to ask somebody for help, or I didn't want to because, I felt like, well, I should be able to figure that out, or, like I had this sort of hard-headed mentality, like I'll just get it done by myself, you know what I mean? And that's not people with disabilities, like part of the mental and like almost like growth as a human being is like realizing we need to ask each other for help, and if somebody doesn't understand something that you're talking about, and if they're kind of, ableist, even not on purpose, it's like, it's almost on us to sort of help them overcome that barrier and realize like, this is something that's it's not weird or strange. It's just, part of life, really. But
It is
I don't
part of
know.
life.
Yeah.
It
But
is part
there
of
is definite intersectionality there, right? I mean, you let yourself kind of go that route. I'm not a normal person, or I should be asking for help with this, and then it's like, well, wait a minute, that's not helping my situation, and I know that it, like things like anxiety, depression, really they're factors, and there's certain situations that really, even myself, it triggers, things like that. And I think even, being honest with yourself and realizing that there are certain things that happen maybe daily that trigger these things, or it's worth at least looking at and trying to get help with.
Yeah, and it's yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking about the messaging from society about disability and how we place our society places more value on able people, on people based on not having a disability or not needing help or because it's supposed to be associated with, productivity, money, capitalism, all that bullshit, right? That has nothing to do with anybody's humanity. It's just, how can we extract out of you? So to have that messaging as well constantly doesn't help, and so it's not just, I mean, it's to say that the feelings that people are experiencing as a result of all of that, it can be the tendency or the push a lot of times is to internalize that and to say, oh, well, I should do this, or I should be able to do that, etc. Yeah, it, That's not great.
No,
That's
it's
not
not.
great. That's not great. That's not rooted in anybody's humanity, anybody's human rights.
Right.
It's, yeah, it's just
And
that. It's the shit.
eventually, I mean, when you internalize stuff like that, eventually it overpowers you. And I mean, it's sort of, just, I mean, it's debilitating,
Yeah.
Oh, like I think of all the things that people with disabilities can do and actually they actually do on a daily basis. It's like that's something that's it's great. And I think it's, a really good thing.
Yeah. You know,
Yeah,
disability is
internalizing.
beautiful.
Yeah.
And so bringing back some of that silver lining, or maybe just like if there's any way to, this might be a big question. I don't
Yeah.
know. But I think it's worth asking, though. What can be done? What can be done in society to support our mental health, right? To not affect our mental health in such negative ways and to, actually help us to increase our
Yeah.
mental health or,
Right. Yeah. I kind of think, yeah, I see what you're saying. I really, the first thing that comes to mind is like, it needs to start early. And like to me, families, parents, when they have a child with a disability, like a lot of them become some of the biggest advocates and give advice and thoughts to other people. And I think it's kind of a chain reaction. Like the parents, once they accept it and promote it as it is something human and a natural thing, and then if the kids grow up in a nurturing type of environment like that, where it is a human thing, and it's something that's not looked down on and doesn't make you less productive as a human compared to anybody else. And I think you start there, and then people, like, I know there's many speakers that go into like schools and early on try to involve other students or children and being involved and interacting with people with disabilities as well, and then go from there. I just think there's like these places where like it's taking like a catalyst, right, to get it going. And then you would think it would be a sort of a like a snowball effect, right, where it just gets more and more momentum. But there's still so many places I feel like people don't have the awareness, and to be honest, maybe there's not many people with disabilities where they're at, so I think spreading that message and that awareness and social media has made a huge difference. It's really helped with that. But even me personally, I'm still surprised that certain places you go or certain accessibility issues that pop up, it's like, it's still causing all the problems, including the mental problems, and stress and worry too. So I think just keep, like, the more we can energize the water, so to speak, right, and have like a pipeline of like advocacy and just awareness and knowledge,
Yeah, absolutely. Advocacy coming directly from disabled and chronically ill people, having access to platforms to share our experiences and our knowledge. Absolutely. Yeah,
And
absolutely
I
for
also
sure.
think it's not just the disabled individuals themselves, it's their support team. Like, my family has been supportive and advocated for it, and then people at the university where I worked, they became more than supervisors or mentors, right? They're like, they become part of that message too. And then, like, I've mentored students through the years, and they've become part of it, so it's, you can see places where it happens. And I think that's like if people with disabilities can use their network and like spread it from there, I think that's one of the main goals.
Yeah. And, I think one of the hurdles with it, right, with battling this stigma against disabled and chronically ill people and just ableism overall is, the ways that parents are so often told about their children's disabilities is so often in a negative way. So it's from the start not helpful because even if they are, first learning about a particular disability or illness at that time, they're hearing it with like the worst, like just the worst idea of it.
And basically like the child's life is over before, it even starts. And it's like, well, no, you don't really understand the situation.
Right. Exactly. Cause cause they don't experience it. And clearly they're so
else too,
disconnected
like,
from disabled community.
Exactly. And eight, like the mortality and death, again, that's another human thing, right? And like, just because you have a certain disability, that doesn't necessarily define how many years you have, right? And then there's others that they lose. I mean, they're gone, way too young for just strange reasons or accidents or whatever, So I think that parents, I mean, if I had a child that was showing signs of a disability, I just think that you have to be, creative and have an open mind about, like, there, you can still live a full, successful life, and, and your family can enjoy that as well. I just think that too many parents, they hear that news and they're just like, they shut down, and it's such a negative, diagnosis or negative message for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's also the lack of accessibility, right? Because once they hear that message and then they look around and they see the lack of accessibility and the ways that our society makes it hard, makes it harder, exacerbates disability rather than supporting it, there might be some of that fear too.
Exactly, for sure. There's way too much of that. And I think accessibility is also information, right? I mean, like, whether it's internet, somebody else has a similar disability, it's like, if those information sources aren't there to help people through these issues, then I mean, what else do they fall back on but what they've seen in society, their whole lives, basically. That just ableist thing is just, it's everywhere still, even with all the progress,
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about dating.
Oh, that's a fun one.
Yeah. Let's talk about dating. How has dating been generally?
I mean, to say that it hasn't been impacted as much or more than anything else with my life, like that's a understatement for sure. It's been, one of the biggest things that's affected, by a disability of my mind, everything from like the time you can spend with somebody before you need to meet with your caregiver, or, just little things like that. Or like you can't reach, a straw to drink if you're eating up for coffee or whatever too. So, it goes all the way from little things like that to, much, much bigger things like, how do I move? If it got serious enough, how would I move away from, my current situation, and how would you deal with caregiving needs and all that, and then thoughts of being like a burden to your significant other if, once you get serious enough, it's everywhere.
Yeah, always gotta look out for the ways that ableism, affects.
For sure.
Yeah. And the, like you were talking about, like we were talking about the lack of awareness,
Yeah.
also, but lack of accessibility in general, all that
Right.
stuff. Yeah.
Right. And you know, the online like dating atmosphere is it's even filled with more ableism, I think, because it's someone just looking, you know, they're sitting at home behind a screen and they're like, eh, that person doesn't look like they're not, they don't have the six pack I'm looking for, right? So I'm just gonna move on. No problem.
Oh yeah, because ableism and patriarchy, right, and all of the gender oppression so tied
Oh yeah.
together. How do you feel about the online dating apps though? Do you like them? They fucking annoy me.
I can't even describe to you how much I hate them. Even though, you know, when I first started, it's like, well, I couldn't go to all these places to meet these people, you know, before. So I was like all about it, right? Like I was doing the spotlighting and like the, you know, promoting like my profile, all of that stuff. And like the more you do it, the more you realize this is worthless. And it's like, and then don't even get me started on like the disability focused apps, you know, that they're making these days. Like they're even worse. I mean, it's just it seems hopeless at times.
And it's bullshit online dating,
Totally is.
because it's this, it's supposed to be the most accessible way to date, right? And then all this fuckery.
And it might be the least, really.
Exactly, because of that, right? Yeah, and can you tell me which ones are the disability focused ones? Just
Like
curious.
the apps. Well, there's I know there's one called, is it like Wheelchair Date or Dateability? I don't know. There's so many like names, and I'll say like the idea and the thoughts behind them are great, you know, and a lot of them are started by people with disabilities looking for a relationship, you know, looking for a dating life. And the intentions are awesome, but you know, they maybe don't have the support system available. And then
Right.
there's, you know, all of these like internet bots and people with bad intentions that just are on there just for the wrong reasons, you know, and it's there's not a great solution that I see for, you know, improving them really.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point that a lot of these sites are created and run by disabled people, but it's also not just the site, it's also so many other factors as well that make it hard.
Well, it's the ableist culture basically going in there with the idea that they're just going to destroy the effort to, you know, to
Yeah,
have a
I mean,
date or to.
outright sabotage. Well, definitely,
Exactly.
they'll definitely, yeah, fuck it up.
Yeah,
Very well.
totally.
You know, I thought about making a fake profile to catfish and see what would happen. I really want to.
Was that last part?
I really want to. I'm
Oh
thinking about
yeah,
it. I'm thinking about
I could totally see that. I'm like, I've even played around with like, well, I'm just gonna put nothing about my disability or put like little clues in there and see if they pick it up almost, you know.
Right,
But
right. If you know, you know.
it's it's ridiculous, and it doesn't seem to matter what you change, honestly. It's like, I don't know. It's not a great system.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Why do you think there is a stigma online specifically about interabled relationships? Like, why are many people calling these relationships fake?
Yeah, that's, you know, again, it goes back to that normalization in society, right? Like, there's so many stories, you know, like people assume they see, you know, someone in a wheelchair with somebody who's walking alongside, and it's just like, oh, well, that's a like a charity case, or you know, like they're just, you know, trying to get attention or whatever. And I'm just like, you guys don't know the like, you know, the connections that you can develop with someone with a disability. I mean, that they're deeper than a lot of other ones, right? I mean, and like then there's disabled relationships too that I think are, you know, they're just as good, you know, like just as deep a bond and connection. And I just think that, you know, online especially, it's like again, someone sitting behind a keyboard, like trying to sabotage or trying to like entertain themselves for a few minutes, right? And like come up with these things. And it's just, to be honest, a lot of them, I don't know how a lot of social influencers, especially if they're like an interabled couple trying to, you know, talk about it. It's like, if you read comments on these things, like if you read your Twitter feed and all of that, you might as well just like, I know it's hard to ignore it, but yeah. Try to minimize it or try not to give them as much of a voice, you know, but then, you know, you really need to get those accounts blocked, but
yeah.
And I'm sure that there's thousands that are probably blocked by, you know, people that are making content, but it's like, yeah, there's, and it's not just disability either, right? I mean, like, any issue, like societal issue, any, you know, say you like, even you like a sports team, right? And you're getting attacked by these like faceless profiles, you know, running you down. It's just that online, you know, culture with that, it's bad. And that's why I go to things like videos, like interviews, like we're doing right now, you know, like face-to-face people that are talking, like it's kind of a nice change, right?
Right. I love that. And thank you. You know, cause there are so many places online where it's not welcoming. It doesn't feel like it even takes into account that disabled people exist at all.
No,
you know,
that's,
yeah.
And there's nothing that removes the human, you know, factor more than, you know, these faceless like chat messages and things. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's that block function. Okay. It's crucial. It's crucial.
Yeah, don't be afraid to use it, is all I can say.
Yeah.
And to be honest, you can tell, almost always you can tell which ones are the ones that need to go. So
exactly. So, like, I think
don't
you're
be afraid
here
of hurting feelings, yeah. Right?
Exactly. Trust your gut. Trust your gut. And even if a couple was, you know, doing it for the money, an online, you know, so influencer relationship or whatever, so what? If a disabled person is aware of the situation and still getting sex, so what?
I mean, it's a like a personal thing, right? Like if you're like in a situation where you're in a good place, then by all means, for sure.
Yeah. And where do you place the importance of your dating and sexual life in relation to your disability?
You know, a lot higher now than I used to. I'll say that much to start with. But, you know, like growing up with a disability, you know, the first thing was always I was good at studying. I was good at academics, you know, and had good grades. And, you know, like that, I used it in a lot of ways as a crutch to some extent, right? I mean, like, obviously there was good from it as well, but I think it's easy to fall back on, you know, because I'm good at math, good at science, you know, that I can almost ignore these other things that are, I mean, they're human needs too, right? Like it's human to want, you know, a relationship or, you know, someone to have like a sexual relationship with. I mean, that's not, again, that's a stigma thing, and it's something that you can beat yourself up about, that you don't deserve, you know, that so many other people want, right? So it's, for me now, it's, I won't say it's the only thing that matters, but it's up there among, you know, the top priority list for me, you know, just like, you know, my family and then, you know, faith and that, you know, all those other human needs with wanting a partner, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a valid desire, right? It's a very human desire.
Right.
And, you know, there's going to be different reasons for different people, whether, you know, where they place that in what they're valuing at any given point in time. But there's nothing wrong with it either way.
Exactly. I mean, if that's something that you want, then you shouldn't like think you don't deserve it just because, you know, you have a disability or you're in a wheelchair or whatever, right? I mean, and again, it's kind of like the wheelchair or like accessibility tools. It's like, you know, it's not a one size fits all. It's not to say that, you know, because I rank it up there on my priority value list that someone else has to, but if they do, then great. You know, they should have that option as well.
Absolutely. For anything, including sex, including relationships, including, you know, connection with other human beings, you know, consensual, like as long as it's that, adults, you know,
right.
That, right?
Yes, I do.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, anything that makes somebody human or is a human need or desire or anything, it's like, you know, it kind of is up to the person, really.
Right. Yeah. But the main thing is nothing is off limits or, at least it should off limits.
And you know, no, like nobody should be forced to change, you know, because somebody else says they should, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you brought up too the need for the distraction from dating and sex.
Yeah.
Because I do that with my job. You know, I haven't had a relationship. I would obviously want one, but because of the inaccessibility, I make myself work all the time.
Yep. And COVID made that worse for me, honestly, because like instead of, you know, being forced like to have some interaction daily, it was like, oh, I should just be in my room working all the time, right? And so like, you know, the self-imposed pressure to, you know, like have success and be productive and, you know, like, and then I was like, well, I'm working from home now. I should make more progress than anybody else, right? Because like I don't want the accessibility issues of going into society. So it's just like that's not a healthy thing, you know, and like whatever you have to do to not isolate in one place and not spend all of your time on, you know, on work. And I mean, if you enjoy it that much, great. But like if it's, you know, well, for me, it was kind of a crutch or like a distraction from other issues that I probably should have addressed a while back, you know, like going back to the mental health and like internalizing these things. It's like, it's easy to get into that mode of, you know, like I'm good at this and I can just not stress out about the other parts of my life if I do this. But
yeah, it's not healthy, but it's what I do. And like you said, you know, there's other shit going on. COVID, you know, like it's definitely still doing its thing. And, you know, for many of us, maybe that our day-to-day has, it looks different now from a year ago, but for many of us, that's still not the case. You know, many of us are definitely still needing to be very mindful of COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so.
And I will say too, like that, that's not to say that, you know, you need these other things in your life, like, you know, like having a job, you know, or hobbies or, you know, like volunteering, whatever it is that you're interested in and that you're able to do, like if you're passionate and like want to do it, like you absolutely need those things alongside, you know, other issues that you're trying to work through that maybe don't have a quick, easy or simple solution, you know? So it's a life balance, basically, not just work-life balance, but like just life balance, like,
you know, life balance,
family time, time with your pets, time outside, and like whatever you want to do.
Yeah. And there's like, nothing about being disabled that just automatically, you know, turns off part of our humanity or turns off part of, you know, like,
That's, I like that line a lot, you know, like those switches don't just go off, right? I mean, they're still there for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The in-person, the face-to-face, the Zoom calls, all of it, you know, it plays a part in connecting us with each other. And when it comes to the Zoom fatigue, Very understandable,
Yeah.
especially for those of us who have been isolated, for all of this time, and at the same time, for those of us who do have more accessibility because of, our individual body makeup, et cetera, for those of us who do have more of a choice, it definitely can be, it's helpful because COVID is here for all of us. So, at the very least for that, if it can be a Zoom call, unless, and if, like you were saying earlier, everyone's disability is going to be individual, so maybe there's obviously ways to do in person, but we've got to be asking disabled and chronically ill people, okay, so, what do you need for this to be accessible?
Exactly. And that's a good thing to always like think about that person and ask that person like what they're comfortable with on, in person or Zoom or whatever. And there's people that aren't comfortable being on camera. And I'm like, I understand that too. So, it's to me, it's about again being open and creative and, kind of expressing what you're most comfortable with doing and going with it, right?
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly.
And
And
Zoom breaks aren't a bad thing though. Like, just like figure out what your limit is on it, during the day. And, for me, anything longer than 3 hours in a Zoom meeting is like, I have to take a break at least.
yeah, very valid, very valid. Because there's just something very different about sitting in one spot and being in front of a camera for X amount of time. Yeah. And at the same time, Zoom fatigue a lot of times can be a privilege too, because if you're able to truly get worn out from Zoom and it's not like, your most accessible way of communicating, then that means you're having more accessible ways to communicate, which is great. But
Right,
then,
exactly. And I will say, like, even before COVID, I was part-time remote and I was using, like Skype or virtual chats to talk with people. So it's not like it was this weird thing that came up all of a sudden, but even then, even having that experience, it was like, all of a sudden almost all of your interaction, is online. So it was an adjustment for me for sure.
definitely,
Yeah.
definitely, yeah. Just the adjustment of it, the difference in not being able to, do your day-to-day life in the ways that you have been able to
Yeah.
do it, with the limited accessibility that we are
Yep.
experiencing already, right? Even
And
before.
you work so hard to, develop a system and figure out your needs and everything, and then something like COVID comes along and just completely, like, I mean,
Yeah.
it wasn't, I mean, I know in some sense it affected like all society, but for people with disabilities that, already faced ableism and like isolation and that kind of stuff, it made it worse. And it's
Yeah.
yeah,
Disruptive would be an understatement.
yeah.
I think you were actually, were you in the middle of a thought when we froze?
I think I was mainly talking about, the fact that I had used virtual calls like well before COVID, and like it was a
Yeah.
really helpful, useful tool. But then when, whatever social interaction that you are used to is stripped away, then it's still, it's not great, even if the tool is, is something that works for you. Like to be forced to use it all the time is, it's a challenge. And again,
Yeah.
everybody has their own setup and their own stuff they're comfortable with. And COVID just like came in there like wrecking ball status, right? And just totally like obliterated anything that we had as like our normal day to day.
Total disruption. Total
Yeah.
disruption. And so when it comes to dating, and meeting people online, connecting with new people online.
Yeah.
In your experience, what would you say are some red flags that we as disabled people, disabled individuals, people with disabilities should look out for in dating.
I mean, one of the big things to me is the whole idea of that, like people that are almost addicted to inspirational stories, like they, it's the wrong reason to be attracted to somebody. Again, we're all human and we all overcome hurdles, but it's like just because I, need help getting into my chair or getting dressed or something in the morning, like that shouldn't be something that people just think is like this awe-inspiring, amazing thing, and it's like, everyone's gonna have their issues at some point with disability or whatever, and to like think it's, this miracle thing, everybody gets through the challenges they have their own way, it doesn't mean like, that it's like this amazing thing, right? So that's one thing, being, if they're just like overly like inspired and like, like you give me a reason to wake up in the morning, just whatever. And then obviously things like, trying to get personal information that, somehow they can mess with your identity or whatever, or like obviously asking for money, like for things is like, a big red flag. And then like the profiles, like if you see someone's profile that they have maybe like one picture and like zero posts and 25,000 followers, and they're like, why don't you like join my cause and we'll help promote your disability or whatever, that kind of thing. And I've seen them. I've totally seen profiles like that to try to, try to manipulate that way.
That's
I'm trying to
scary.
think.
Yeah, it's predatory, right?
Seriously, yeah. And I think that it's much more predatory for people that have disabilities, right? Because like they can be taken advantage of in other ways that able-bodied people can't. So I think, meeting in person too, I feel like if you get to that point on social media, like make sure it's a safe public place, like don't let someone just like meet up with you and maybe take your wheelchair van and take you on a drive like to some, like abandoned place or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah,
It'd be like a
exactly.
horror movie, right? Like
Truly.
even then, I was in a, I only, I did this once and I probably won't do it again, but I was in a speed dating thing where we had like 6 minutes per person, but it was so random. It was like in a brewery or a winery, and they took us back to this room. It was like a warehouse or something. And I'm sitting there thinking, I've seen this on Netflix somewhere. Like, I should not. And I was the only one that was disabled there, but I couldn't help but think like, this is a public place, and I felt a little bit like endangered. So, just
Wow,
like,
yeah.
yeah, and be willing to be a little bit cautious, I think, right? Because if the person is attracted to you or wants to talk to you, like virtual should be an option at first, right? And then like public places, and then go from there. Otherwise, like if the interest, is like not consistent, or if you get all that big ghosting thing, right, where someone just stops communication, it's just like there's so many little things like that, but I think that if it's the right person, and if the connection is real, then it's going to be great. And if not, then just be aware of these pointers for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, good
And there's
information to
others.
have.
I'm sure I haven't addressed all of them, but I'm sure there's other things that have come up for other people. But yeah.
Yeah, and in the comments, if you have experience or red flags that you've experienced that you want to
Yeah.
share, please, by all means
Sure.
add to our list, because yeah, because unfortunately, there's no way to know preemptively everything, or to, see every red flag or detect every red flag.
Right. Right.
So if something ever, like, it's not your fault, but it can be helpful though to
Totally.
share the red flags though, because Yeah, because
I mean, there's, if I can help someone else avoid anything like that, great. So I even do a top 10 sort of social media thing on Instagram per week now, and like that might be one I do too next. Like red flags for people with disabilities and dating. But yeah, like I'd be willing to share, anything I can think of specifically that, that we can put out there, because it's an issue, and as good as, and it, you're right, it doesn't take long to go from, safety on social media to a real life situation, and then it might be too late. So yeah.
Yeah, so thank you for sharing the red flags. And anybody in the comments,
Again.
if you have anything to add, please, by all means.
Definitely. Because it'll help us too, probably.
Yes, we could all use the support.
Yeah.
And so how do you explain to partners that most people don't have marriage equality?
Wow.
Are you, well, question, are you a part of a community that doesn't have marriage equality? Because it's not necessarily going to be the same for
I
every
think
disabled person.
I don't want to assume, like, for every family around here, but I think there's some of both. For like the people I'm around, it's an equal. I mean, I think the equality is for the most part, fair and right. But then, there's always some that, and it doesn't have to be disability, right? But like other, I don't know, different ethnicities, different religions, different like political affiliation, like, that can lead to inequality as well, and I think
Absolutely.
it depends where you live too. But myself, I try to, again, be balanced on things. I'm like, if it takes away, anything that's a freedom, or is gonna impose on somebody or oppress somebody, it's like, like that's, it doesn't matter where it's, right? If it's in a marriage or whatever, like that just shouldn't. And then that actually reminds me of the, like, some of the benefits that people with disability face. I've been reading this a little bit more, but like if they want to get married, like, they're gonna lose money because their partner has like more assets or something. Than I'm just like why is this even, like, we have as much right to be in a marriage as anybody else, right? And like we shouldn't be penalized in any way because of that.
And I'm so glad you mentioned that too, because there are disabled people who are able to get married without having any such issues. But then there's also many of us who will absolutely, lose benefits, will be affected because the laws around disabled people, are in
It's
such a way that.
ridiculous. Yeah, that's like, there's some of the worst laws out there, in my opinion, that make no sense whatsoever.
None, none. I mean, unless you just hate disabled people, that makes sense.
Well, I know there's some of those out there, but
Yeah, because it's just, why make it hard? Why make it
yeah,
hard?
and like situations change, right? Like I was fortunate enough, for most of my years with the disability, I could work and make enough, money to support myself and do everything I needed. But then there's like times like now, like, when health issues get worse, or if, like, you develop something chronic, maybe that, you can't make the same earnings you used to before for whatever reason. And then, to like, you're gonna need the benefits then, right? I mean, so I don't understand how people could be stripped of like assets or money or value because they're marrying somebody. Like, that doesn't even compute at all.
It doesn't compute, not when it comes to, anybody's humanity, anybody's human rights,
And where
and
did it come
although,
from? That's what I want to know. Like, how did it even get in place to start with?
right, because I mean, because the only way I can think about it computing is, capitalism and eugenics, and
That's
trying
it.
to, make it hard for disabled people to form families support each other, support their families,
Also, that
making.
doesn't compute either. I mean,
Right.
that's ridiculous,
Right.
and then, and again, that stems right back to all the big issues that, we've been talking about. It's another example, right?
Exactly. What kind of partner do you envision for your life? Having the experience that you've had, the things that you've learned up to this point, and just where you are today, what comes to mind there?
I definitely, I'm not like super specific, but somebody that definitely, has like the right, like, I don't know, the right mindset in a relationship, that's like, it's about connection, it's not just like a physical thing or whatever, but also somebody who, has some patience and who's like willing to be creative and, like I somebody that's kind of open, right? Like maybe even a bit adventurous, right? Because, if you haven't lived or been with someone with a disability, like in some ways it's an adventure because you're gonna get new experiences almost every day. So,
Oh yeah.
I
Oh
think
yeah, you won't be bored.
no, you won't. And to be honest, like don't assume, like I don't want someone who assumes that they know like what all I can do in a relationship, right? Like, or even like assuming I couldn't travel or live in the location where I find the right person, right? Like, I think that, and this could be for disabilities in general, just don't, someone that doesn't have assumptions, right? Like, who's just like open and honest and willing to, to do new things. I think that's the biggest. And, the person I'm looking for doesn't necessarily have to like every single thing I'm into or anything, but, and like obviously air travel is, there's all the issues that we all know too well about that. So like it's not like I could travel to all the continents right now, but but there's still other places you can travel that don't take an airplane to. So just
Don't assume, right? Like, don't assume, don't write people off.
And in the
People.
same way, like the person I'm looking for, I'm trying not to write anything with them off either, right? Like I try not to have strict expectations, right? Because like sometimes what you think you might like or be interested in isn't what you end up, wanting either. So.
Yeah, humans are, we're complex, we're dynamic, we change over time,
Daily by the hour, maybe.
it's non-linear,
Yeah.
and yeah, I love that. And
And
what else
obviously,
was
like the humor thing, I know that a lot of times people think that disability means like you can't have fun or you can't, enjoy things or laugh or whatever. But I think that's like, for me, that's still one of the biggest things, whether it's even if it's a little bit sarcastic, right? Like I just, to me, like laughing at other things and at yourself. Like I still laugh at some things that I do. So, but if you're in the, yeah. And if you're like in the ICU and on like anesthesia and that kind of thing, definitely laugh about some of those stories because I said some things that were very random. So.
it's there's just something about, there's something about the anesthesia. It brings out the random. It brings out the
Oh
random.
yeah. But I laugh at it though. Like that actually is one of the few things that, I remember from being in there that was kind of funny.
Just being open to the different experiences that, different disabled people will have. Being open to, how that individual, each disabled person is gonna experience stuff, because you experience that as funny, but if someone's assuming, oh, it's not, then there's that misconnection, that missed moment of connection, where it could have just been funny. Was there anything else though that you wanted to talk about today? Anything that we didn't touch on?
I mean, there's probably all kinds of, other things that have some connection to disability to talk about, like career paths and, being successful, like as an adult, out in the open with a disability and those kinds of things, and then, it's, I feel like there's just anything life in general is interesting to talk about. But yeah,
And it
and
all
I will say,
relates.
sorry.
I was just saying, it all relates.
Yeah, for sure. And I was gonna say too, like some of the, it's not to say the only people but have been around people with disabilities are good partners, but I've found in a lot of cases that the environment that someone's been around, whether they know someone with a disability, like who's a friend or family, or if if they have a child with a disability, it's like, just they have that deeper connection, right? Like they understand at least in some sense what you're going through, right? I mean, that's something else that I've noticed lately, that at least some familiarity seems to like break down that ableist, kind of thinking.
Absolutely, absolutely. And and it's such an important part of our lives, right? The close connections that we have.
And people that relate, right?
And people that relate. So it's definitely worth it to be selective and but also to be open at the same time,
Both things at once, right?
Exactly, exactly. Hi, this was great.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot too. Thanks so much for, I mean, like this kind of thing is not something I've like seen. I mean, this yours is the first one where you can actually, sign up and do that. So
Well, I'm so honored that you
yeah,
came
I appreciate
on.
it.
So glad. Thank you for coming on and having this conversation.
Yeah, no
And
problem.
yeah, I'm glad
Let's
to hear
both
you
my
enjoyed
thoughts.
it. I enjoyed it. I appreciate all of the insights, the red flags, the silver linings, all of it. And if people want to connect with you and support the work that you do, where can they
Yeah.
do so?
Well, definitely on Instagram is like the main place where I'm, doing things these days, but it's Dr. Ty D. Martin with a period after doctor. Yeah, and like there's stuff I try to bring in that's disability related, but also other things that people might enjoy or find useful. So
Yeah, infinite range, infinite range.
yep, exactly.
Yes, and I'll definitely make sure to share everything in the description below. Once again, I'm
Okay.
Sean Gold. Thank you for watching. Make sure that you like, comment, share, subscribe. Also, please make sure the bell is on to be notified of each upload. And I'll see you all next time on another episode of Crippled by Culture.
Want to listen to Crippled by Culture on your favorite podcast platform? Well, now you can. Crippled by Culture is now available wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search up the show title and make sure you subscribe. Thank you for being a listener.